Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Oh, Frederick, are you all right?
Yes. Would you excuse me for 1 minute, dear?
Oh, of course, Doctor.
Igor? May I speak to you for a moment?
Of course.
Sit down, won't you?
Thank you.
No, no, up here. Oh,
thank you.
Now, that brain that you gave me, was it Hans Delbruck's?
No.
Ah, good. Would you mind telling me whose brain I did put in?
And you won't be angry?
I will not be angry.
Abby someone.
Abby who?
Abby Normal.
Abby Normal.
I'm almost sure that was the name.
Are you saying that I put an abnormal brain into a 7.5-foot-long, 54-inch-wide gorilla?
What?
Is that what you're telling me? Quick, quick, get him up!
What?
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. He's green, so don't make him angry. You wouldn't like him when he's angry. Here he is, Mike Novak. And they pay me for this, folks. Okay.
All right, do we do a Halloween scream?
A Halloween scream?
Everybody in the studio?
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
That was pathetic.
What?
That was a pathetic scream.
Then you do it.
Get in here.
Get in here and do
give
one.
Us a scream. Come
give
on,
us
give
one.
Us a scream.
It's Mr. Mike
this,
Sanders
this,
from
this
our
Mike
town.
Sanders. Go ahead, give us a scream.
Come right. on, do it.
Well, we're going to all do this or it's just me?
No, now it's all you.
Now, well, no, I was just going to say because it was like
let's
I was in the other
room.
Shut
up, dog.
Yeah.
Really?
Let me.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
What gender was that?
Oh, I'm in my Halloween costume is all I'm saying. Thank you very much.
Mike Sanders, host of Our
yes!
Town. Can't leave well enough alone.
We got a phone call already.
Wow. Do you think it's a ghost or a goblin?
Let's find out.
All right, you do that. Welcome on this Halloween day to the Mike Novak Show, and we're even going to do a little Halloween stuff. As you know, it's Heather's favorite holiday in the whole universe. And
yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
And how are you preparing?
I'm a little tired because we, of yeah. course, the best ideas
you
came with
partying?
The little.
Oh, she even brought her witch's hat.
I brought my hat.
my broomstick I couldn't find this morning. Otherwise, I would have gotten a better ride to work.
Well, no wonder that your floors aren't swept.
I know. Well, I'm moving. That's half my problem. Ooh. It's like lost in the abyss of boxes.
And, oh my goodness, Amtrak Tim is with us, too. Hey, we haven't talked to him in a little bit. Hang on just a second, Amtrak Tim. I'll be with you in a second. So, Halloween and William's going. What's William going as?
If it's cool this afternoon, he will be a cheeseburger. If it's warm like it was yesterday, he will be a vampire.
Mmm. I like the idea of the cheeseburger myself.
Yeah, I do too. That's what he wore yesterday.
Because I could
really
just eat him up.
I know. But I think he's starting to understand that Halloween is a spooky holiday. So he wants to go from being something cute to something scary.
Ah.
And so he's like, I want to be a vampire.
Maybe he should morph from a cheeseburger into a vampire.
I think he would if he could.
Yeah. Well, you could just put the vampire costume underneath and then you'd take the cheeseburger off.
The black cape on the back of the
bun.
There
we are, and then suddenly we got a vampire. On the show today, from the sublime to the ridiculous and back again. Actually, from the ridiculous to the sublime and back again. Guy Sternberg, arborist extraordinaire, is in the studio. Say hello, Guy.
Hello, Mike.
The man with the deepest voice.
It's awesome.
In
You're
horticulture.
Right.
Oh, wait.
Oh, my God, that was perfect.
I was going to ask
it's
you.
It's on there. It's on disc two.
No. We don't need it. Okay, everybody quiet. Give it to us one more time, Guy.
Well, if you were talking to Lurch and you asked him for a comment, he'd say, you rang, sir.
So just give me a you rang out in the clear because I'm going to use it on my show from here. All right, here we go.
You rang.
Guy Sternberg.
Awesome.
In studio. And how tall are you, Guy?
Too tall.
Come on, how tall are you really?
2 meters on the nose.
Which is?
6'6".
See, he is Lurch. And he's here in the studio.
Lurch with a big green thumb.
With a big green thumb, who can grow trees better than anybody. And of course, Guy has his own arboretum down Menard Way, Menard County Way, just a stone's throw from New Salem in the state of Illinois, where Abraham Lincoln hung a shingle for a while.
I've been there.
It's cool.
It's very cool.
And it's called Star Hill Forest Arboretum. And the amazing thing about the arboretum is Guy's planted pretty much all the trees in there at one point or another. You've been doing this 30 years now, right?
Well, a few of those I planted back in the 1840s. But, but the more recent ones, that was in a previous life. But, yeah, more recent ones, we started in 1976, and we've been working out ever since.
And it's, I mean, how many people do you know have planted their own arboretum? That's just amazing.
One.
Yes. And he's in the room right now.
And I've just met him face-to-face this morning. It's been on the phone all times previous. So.
And this is a relatively new development. It is now, when you're no longer caring for it, it now belongs to the people, at least to a college.
Yes, we've got a trust agreement with Illinois College in Jacksonville. And we already have working arrangements with them for student interns and credit students and various courses that take field trips out there and so forth. So yeah, we have a very good partnership and we're very happy about
that's
it.
That's great. I'm so glad to hear that. At some point we'll also talk about the Osage Orange tree out in Kewaunee, which Guy and I and a bunch of other people have been trying to save now for about a year. Or is it 2 years? Is it? How long is it? A year. About a year.
It's been about a year. Yeah. Time flies.
It does. And you want to see a picture of Guy?
No, you don't.
I've got it on the...
I think that's so cool.
And Kathleen added a little ghost to it. Didn't you see that?
I thought it was just mist, but it is a ghost. I see the face on it now.
Come around there, Guy, and you got to take a look at this.
It's on this week on MikeNovak.net.
That one.
MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. You see a picture Guy desecrating a
final resting place.
Yes.
You know what?
But
the
that's not desecration. I've seen desecration. That's not it.
And he's teaching a course today at the Morton Arboretum called Cemetery Botany. How cool is that? So we're going to talk about that in just in a couple of minutes here. At 10 o'clock, well, some point during the show, Heather wrote this thing. Now, we're going to need music behind it. Do we even have music for it?
I have
Night on Bald Mountain?
Yeah, but I don't know if that would be so fitting, but because it's a little more whimsical than that.
She wrote a little piece here, and
I couldn't help it.
It's about 62 pages long.
That's why I said you had to give me like a 10-minute window.
And she throws it at me like 5 minutes to the show. She said, "Do you want to read this?"
I'll read it or you can read it. I don't care.
I think we'll alternate.
Okay.
We'll sneak it in whenever we can.
Okay.
All right.
You'll like it. I promise.
A tribute to Halloween and gardening. I have no idea. Be afraid.
From the warped, twisted
very
mind
afraid.
Of Heather Fry.
In the 10 o'clock, or 10 o'clock hour, Jack Darren from the Illinois Sierra Club and Max Muller from Environment Illinois are going to be on the program, and we're going to talk about green endorsements. Can I remind you, and Mike Sanders said it on his show, please get out and vote. Please go out this Tuesday. Of course, a lot of people voted. I've voted already. I voted last Wednesday.
I have not voted yet. But I did go to the Chicago Bar Association page, and they actually have a printout that you can take that is like you can cut it to a square, like a business card size, and bring it to you as a pocket guide of which judges they do not recommend.
Right.
And I was like, fabulous. Printed it out. Have it in my wallet. Ready to go.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And there are many other organizations you can find, various bar organizations in Illinois. IVI IPO, if you like their recommendations, that's another place you can go and find. I'm not trying to scare anybody, but I said it last week, I believe, and I still believe it, that judges should be picked by committee and merit, not this voting, because the average person doesn't know what they're voting on.
The ballot goes
on for a while, and most people just want to go in there and they want to vote for their representative and their senator, and water reclamation board and
governor,
sheriff, whatever, you know. But then they throw in all these judges and it's crazy.
I used to leave it blank because I never knew what to put there. So this will be the first time I don't leave that space blank.
You are becoming an educated voter,
better,
young lady.
I'm more capable of critical thinking.
So Jack Darren and Max Muller will be here, and we'll talk about the candidates that their organizations have endorsed, based primarily on environmental considerations. Obviously, there are a lot of considerations in this election, but those will be the environmental ones. And then my brand new segment on the show, starting today, called Good Growing. And somebody said yesterday, hey, yeah, we're getting to the end of the growing season, so you start a growing segment. Well, guess what? You can do this all year, all right? This is not just about what you're putting in the ground today, but it's about issues and ideas. It's about events coming up, and we're going to have some rotating correspondents. Our first rotating correspondent is Mr. Brown Thumb, and you might know him if you're on Twitter or on Facebook, or you go to the his blog. He has a blog called Mr. Brown Thumb. He also writes at Chicago Garden, which is at Chicago Now. He's a great guy, and he's all over the place. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he finds the time. But he's going to start it in the coming weeks. We'll have some people from Angelic Organics Learning Center and others who will give us a quick report each week, maybe 5 to 10 minutes, about what's going on in agriculture, what's going on in urban farming, what's going on in community gardening, what's happening, what you should know, maybe some tips thrown in there. Good growing. 10:45 today on the Mike Novak Show. So, that being said, real quickly, let's go to line one and Amtrak Tim. Good morning, Amtrak Tim.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Heather.
Say good morning to Guy as well.
Good morning, Guy.
Hi, Amtrak.
And that's his real first name.
Anyway, I just wanted to also put in there to the everybody needs to vote, because the Amtrak budget this year, if we end up getting a bunch of people in there who are pro Al Qaeda, meaning that they want us to maximize our gasoline usage and not use public transportation, they're going to get in there. I just put a bumper sticker on my car. I made up you can get the big box stores. You kind of make this up yourself, and it says Al Qaeda profits when you buy gas.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody out there, you need to know whether your candidates are supporting the Amtrak improvements or not. And if they're against them, if you want to zero out the budget, especially people up in Wisconsin, all your listeners in Wisconsin, you've got to vote for the candidates that are going to be supporting putting in the high-speed rail, because Al Qaeda profits when you buy gas.
I'll just add that in there. That's a really good point. I mean, you want progressive people who are going to have progressive policies about the environment. I'm sorry, oil and coal are not progressive. They're just not. And for the people who want to protect the oil and coal companies, and as you said, support Al-Qaeda, that's sending us in the wrong direction.
I one more thing, at, just to put this on a human scale. We have a guy who works in our office part-time for us. He's 28 years old, and he walks with a cane. He's a Marine Corps vet. Everything's still attached. You know, the surgeons did a really good job on him over there from his ID explosion. But if you want to see more 28-year-olds with canes, you know, because their backs and legs are all messed up, then don't vote for Amtrak and vote to maximize the amount of money that Al-Qaeda gets to kill our soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Those wars are about oil. Shouldn't be in either one of them. In my opinion, just get out of there, both places, right now. Just
like when I go to the office, I see the effect of the war every day.
Well, you know, that's a powerful reminder, and a lot of people see the effects of the war every day, too, of those wars. Oh, there goes your phone.
I got it turned off here.
Oh. All right. Well, Amtrak, Tim, always a pleasure. Thank you for the good reminder.
Everybody, vote, vote, vote.
Get the word out.
Yep.
And the last two
three
days.
Times.
Yeah, vote. And right. And what Tim was saying is
vote
three times in Chicago.
I would have.
I don't know if you can do that where you are, but we do it here. All right. Thanks a lot, Tim.
No problem. Bye-bye.
Take care. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And we're going to get to cemetery botany in about 2 minutes. There's no doubt that fall is here. And winter's not far behind. Your friends at Sid's Greenhouses want to remind you that the time is running out if you plan to move your tropical houseplants from your deck or patio inside for winter. Now, a lot of you have had frost, hard frost, and if you didn't move them in, you saw the effects. I still got a couple of plants out there, but I'm in the city, so I'm getting away with it, so I got to do it today or tomorrow. And when you bring them in, don't bring in any bugs or fungus, or some of you put them in a holding area, like a warmer garage or the basement like I did. I've put a lot of my tropicals in there because I haven't had a chance to get to them and make sure that I'm not bringing anything in. So I put them in an out-of-the-way place for a few days, get them acclimated, check them for bugs, and then bring them upstairs. Now, you can pre-treat the plants with Fertilome Triple Action Plus. It's an organic insecticide, miticide, and fungicide all in one. We're talking about neem oil, actually. And then follow with systemic houseplant insect control from Bonai to protect even new growth for up to 8 weeks. And if you need to replace any of your plants, check out Sid's selection of greenhouse plants, including tropicals, lucky bamboo. I've seen some lucky bamboo lately that's just doesn't seem to be so lucky.
Ours met an ill-fated demise.
Is it done?
Oh, I ripped it out of the pot itself and heaved it in the garbage.
Did it have any
done.
Roots on it at all?
It had no roots, and then like the center like stalk had gone yellow. I'd been giving it water, fresh vitamins.
You've been treating it really well.
It didn't want to live, so I let it die.
I think it had such a
assisted it.
It had such a hard life before you got to it. Yeah, oh dear.
You know, I have a solution for Heather. It's called plastic flowers. You can see them in many cemeteries. And they really are easy to take care of.
We'll get to that in
plastic
a second.
Plastic flowers in a cemetery is just wrong.
Okay. Anyway, they've got we're back to Sid's, and where they have decorative ceramic pots and pottery to give your indoor garden a new look, and they're 50% off. Sid's has hundreds of styles and colors available. This week, you'll also save 75% off their entire stock of Halloween decor. See, what you do, some people buy it in advance, and then they save it, and then they use it next week. And you can mark your calendar now for Sid's Christmas open house, November 12th through the 20th, where you'll find everything you need to start and finish your holiday home decorating. Sid, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Are you familiar with Aldo Leopold? He is considered the father of wildlife ecology. WRD Environmental would like you to remember something that Aldo Leopold wrote. He said, the outstanding scientific discovery of the 20th century is not television or radio, but rather the complexity of the land organism. Only those who know the most about it can appreciate how little we know about it. The last word in ignorance is the man who says of an animal or plant, what good is it? If the land mechanism as a whole is good, then every part is good, whether we understand it or not. In the biota, in the course of eons, if the biota, sorry, in the course of eons has built something we like but do not understand, then who but a fool would discard seemingly useless parts? To keep every cog and wheel is the first precaution of intelligent tinkering. At WRD Environmental, they not only appreciate the complexity of our region's ecology, but they are dedicated to protecting, restoring, and healing it. WRD creates sustainable landscapes from large-scale master planning to community pocket parks. For innovative, sustainable landscape development, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology and online at WRDEnvironmental.com.
Attack of the killer tomatoes. Attack of the killer tomatoes. They'll beat you, bash you, squish you, mash you, chew you up for brunch, and finish you off for dinner or lunch. They're marching down the halls. They're crawling up the walls. They're gooey, gushy, squishy, mushy, rotten to the core. They're standing outside your door.
I love Halloween.
I know you do, Heather. That's a good intro to Cemetery Botany with Guy Sternberg, which he's teaching at the Morton Arboretum this afternoon. What, at 1 o'clock?
Yeah, it's a 2-hour program, and we'll be showing cemetery iconography on the gravestones, the plants that you find there, why you find some of them there. Some of the most spectacular trees in America can be found in cemeteries. And we'll spend a lot of time going through it.
Well, okay. What is that all about? I mean, are there really certain plants that you're going to find in cemeteries that you don't find elsewhere?
Well, yes and no. You find a traditional array of species, and a lot of times, and I'm talking about the old cemeteries, pioneer cemeteries and some of the earlier city cemeteries, not the modern ones where they have every gravestone flat and they don't want to plant anything except grass because they want to be able to mow it over everything. I'm talking about the old character cemeteries.
Mm-hmm.
Many times if a community was founded and the founding family lost a family member and they would start a cemetery, they wanted to honor that person with something that was rare or unusual. You know, back in the mid-1800s, it might be a ginkgo or something like this. And often the very first oldest plant of a particular species can be found in a cemetery. And there may have been more than planted around town, but a lot of them were gone. But cemeteries are sacred ground. So mm-hmm. once you have a tree there, you know, it stays there. It's probably the finest example in your area of that particular tree. It's open grown because the trees were scattered around. So you have this big full crown, low branches where you can pick leaves and study the flowers up close. And there are just a variety of plants that are sort of characteristic for each region of the country. And I've been going around. I've looked at about 500 cemeteries in the U.S. and quite a few in other countries. And every region or every country has its own particular way of doing things, and that includes the array of species that you see in these cemeteries. And we'll look at some from other regions of the country as well.
Well, here in the Midwest, what kind of trees do you see that people planted?
Well, a lot of them, for example, here in Illinois, where we don't really have many native conifers, and of course conifers, evergreens, if you will, the trees of life. A lot of times they would plant something that was supposed to be everlasting. They would plant an arborvitae. They would plant a red cedar. If they brought some material from Europe, they would plant things like Norway spruce and several of the pines. Austrian pine is very popular. You also see trees that are planted for longevity. You know, oaks come to mind. You'll find trees that are planted for ornament in the spring, flowering dogwoods, these types of things. And it depends upon, of course, when a person died and was buried, or when the family would be likely to come back, they'd love to plant a tree that would be, number one, long-lived, and number two, something that would be colorful or at its best during the person's birthday or during a time when the family would be there or during a holiday of some kind. And every family has different priorities, so they would plant different things for different reasons.
That's Guy Sternberg. He is an arborist. He is the chief cook and bottle washer for Star Hill Forest Arboretum in Menard County downstate. He's teaching the course Cemetery Botany at the Morton Arboretum this afternoon, 1 o'clock, 1 to 3. One of the things you said just makes so much sense, and I hadn't thought of this before, that when you plant a tree in a cemetery, it's not going to get touched. In fact, often I would think, it, unless there's a storm or something, it probably doesn't get pruned.
Yeah, a lot of times they're planted and left behind. The other thing, too, is that you won't find only the trees or the shrubs, or in some cases even ground cover plants, old daylilies and peonies and things that were planted a century and a half ago are still there.
Really?
But you also find the iconography, the symbolism on the gravestones often is botanical. Mm-hmm. And each of those has a meaning, and every stone carver generally had his own series of carvings he would make. And you can go through cemeteries and pick out three or four stones that were done by the same carver, had the same style. I collect weeping willow stones, and I collect everything, of course.
Wait! You collect the stones? What do? Take them in your truck and take them home, and now you got two stones all over the backyard.
I go on photographic safari. Okay. I don't kill the animal; I just take his picture. But we will look at various old graves from late 1800s. And you see a lot of places where the upright stone had a weeping willow emblem. Sometimes the weeping willow morph into an angel with wings. Sometimes if it was a child's grave, it'll have lambs underneath the willow in the shade. You'll also have a lot of what we call tree stones, where it actually looks like a tree trunk, and the branches of the tree trunk are family members and so forth. And we'll go over a lot of this at Morton Arboretum this afternoon.
Oh, so, by the way, we're getting tweets. And if we're on Twitter, you can just go to @MikeNow. Garden Fairy wrote, "Wow, Mr. Cemetery Botany has a really deep radio voice."
Only on Halloween.
Yeah. That's awesome!
The rest of the time I talk like Heather.
For a girl, they say I have a deep voice, but not like that.
Not like that. Boy, if you could get something like that.
Oh, I'd be so marketable.
You will. You'd do every commercial for the rest of your life.
Yep.
There was a rumor that the program this afternoon at Morton Arboretum is going to be haunted, and that we may have a surprise visitor.
Awesome.
And he may sound like me. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Now, I would assume this is because it's botany. It's mainly for adults. But can kids?
Yeah, if you have a kid with you and they're 8 or 10 years old and they won't be afraid of our guest visitors, sure, bring them along.
Ooh, this sounds, Heather lives out that way.
I had my first experience at the Morton Arboretum at the beginning of this month when the weather was that just unseasonably warm and beautiful, and I took my son to the children's garden. I thought we'd be in there for an hour or two and then walk the rest of the grounds. We were in the children's garden for 6 hours, 5 to 6 hours, easy. It was that spectacular, so I already want to be a member and go back.
Well, the reason they have a children's garden, of course, is to try to bring people into the fold at an early age, try to get them indoctrinated into what's special about nature. And I started really in the 1950s when I was making my grade school leaf collection. It was the first time I went to the Morton Arboretum.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little story there. Do you remember Floyd Swink, who was the taxonomist at Morton Arboretum for years?
Yeah.
Well, I went there the year he started. And I had this leaf in my hand, and I was collecting from my collection. I went to the visitor's center. This tree didn't have a label. Can someone tell me what it is? And they said, there's this nice young man back in the back who had just started this year. His name is Floyd. He types really fast. He said, go down the hallway and listen for the big typewriter going really fast. And, of course, Floyd was a world champion typist.
Was he really?
Yeah.
How fast could he do?
Oh, hundreds and, I don't know, tremendous. And he could do it with nickels on his knuckles and not drop a nickel.
And it was a typewriter.
Yeah, it was the old typewriter. It wasn't an electric typewriter. It was a bang, bang. Bang, bang.
Yeah.
My mom could do 120 words a minute. It was really impressive.
Well, I know Floyd was over 200, but I don't know what the score was. But he was, he won contests all over the world. But he was also a self-taught, brilliant botanist, and he had a photographic mind. And he put his typewriter down, and he helped me to key out the leaf. He could have just told me, that's so-and-so, go on your way. But no, he said, come in and sit down, young man. And he brought out some dichotomous keys and showed me how to use them, and that's what got me interested in growing trees as a science rather than just planting seeds in my sandbox as a kid and say, well, isn't that cool, and going on.
Getting back to the symbols on the gravestones, so did certain trees represent certain things about families, or was it more art? that they were doing.
Well, it was art, but it was also not about the family per se, but about the perception of what's important. Life forever after, the honorable life, the faithful wife, the resurrection. A lot of it had to do with a dying tree and then new ferns and ivy sprouting and leaves sprouting from the stump to show the death and then resurrection. And there are books about this.
Really?
And not everyone always agrees on every symbol, but there are some common threads through it.
Well, give me some of the common symbols that were used.
Well, oaks are used a lot. And, of course, oak represents the strength and endurance and lasting forever. And you may have combinations in a tree stone, for example. And a tree stone is just a gravestone that's shaped like a tree stump, often 8 or 10 or 12 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And the tree is broken off on top, and it'll have several limbs that come out from the sides, and each limb represents a family member on the family tree. And usually these were used as a marker for a family plot, and they'd have the graves around the tree stone. And you might find that one branch is broken rather than cut off smoothly. That was someone who died a violent death. You might find that some of the bark is peeled back on this actual limestone sculpture, and the
how,
names.
How intricate can you get these sculptures?
Oh, tremendously! I'll show you some this afternoon. They'll knock your socks off. You got to come, Mike. You got to come over there.
I don't get my own personal seminar here in the studio.
Well,
I figured,
no, it's
didn't
visual.
You bring any tombstones with you?
We brought more than 1,000 photos of these things, and
wow.
They're all in a pretty elaborate PowerPoint. So you have to come over and see it.
What's the oddest thing you've discovered? I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot of odd things, and when people die and their families memorialize them, it's all unique and sometimes eccentric, I would think. What makes you go, ooh?
Well, it's sort of like asking me what my favorite tree is. It's sort of the last one that I saw.
Yeah.
But there are some people who, like Wiccan, they have Wiccan pentacles, witchcraft on their graves. There are some that have very elaborate carvings that relate to their profession, their interests. I was a Cubs fan or whatever. You have the Cubs emblem on there.
Oh, God.
That's the trunk. That's the tree that never grew.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's the portal to hell when it freezes over.
No, wait.
I'm not saying I'm a Cubs fan, mind you, but you see this often. You see these people that
do that. That's the tree that died 102 years ago, and they never replaced.
They'll have, if they have a passion for a certain sport, if they have, like if the guy was a mason, he'll have the mason symbol on there. If he was a railroad conductor, he might have a little railroad car, on the gravestone.
What about the, I know that a lot of the old ones used to have the photos.
Mm-hmm.
On there,
they still
did
do
they combine
sometimes.
Those with trees at all? Was two separate things?
Well, a lot of times you will have in more modern stones, you'll have laser engraved gravestones that show the person in a setting, and it could be by their house with their favorite tree over the top or something like this. They can do wonders with engraving on stones with lasers now.
Really, and it's a shame that as you say, the cemeteries now have gone the way of more lawn is better. And I'm always trying to get people away from lawn. What gives a cemetery its character is its trees.
It's trees and its monuments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can have a whole history of a community if you look at the style of the monuments. And when you have a flush stone that just basically gives the information with no flair, no personality, it just sort of, it looks like a park from a distance, but it's not a cemetery. It's just open lawn. It could be a golf course from a distance.
Zamboni just tweeted us and said, can we get some of these photos up on my website? Guy, can you send me a couple?
I will try when I get back. It may take a couple days.
We can. That's okay. We can do that. I think it'd be fun.
Zamboni to come on over to Lyle.
Yeah, Zamboni, get over there to Lyle today.
Because we certainly can't put 1,000 up there. I can put a couple, but there
and
are so many interesting
things. It's like $14 or something like that.
Yeah, it's cheap.
Yeah, it's really, really not much. And it'd be a great way to spend Halloween Day, especially if you're in the area. If you haven't. And I'm sorry.
From my understanding, it's supposed to be a pretty nice day today.
Oh, yeah. Come early, walk around the grounds, stay afterwards and see the evening light, get some pictures, bring your camera.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All
speaking
right,
of weather.
Our weather guy called us because he got bored. Not bored. I mean, he wondered, am I going to do something? Okay, Rick DeMaio weather is coming up in just a sec. Guy is going to stick around till 9 o'clock and talk a little more about cemetery botany. If you have a phone call or a question, 773-838-9278 is our number. 773-838-WCPT. Hey, did you give your garden some goodies for Halloween? Now, I'm not talking about sticking a Tootsie Pop in the ground or sprinkling some nerds in the soil. I'm talking about bulbs or mums and pansies, cabbage and kale, 30% off. These goodies for your garden actually end up being goodies for you, which is the real reason why adults really buy candy to give it away to kids. Am I right or what, Heather?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, we just got a couple of big bags yesterday, and all I can think of is, wow, there's going to be a lot left over. Anyways, Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center in Des Plaines has got your goodies. Head to their 9-acre garden center at 2550 East Dempster in Des Plaines, a half block east of 294. And don't forget your pumpkins. If you carve the ones you already got, you know, the squirrels have probably eaten it by now. What are you going to use to make pie? You know, I know there's some of you, they want to do it from scratch. You're crazy, but go ahead, knock yourself out. Or maybe you give to someone else to make a pie for you. So plant yourself over at Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center, located just east of I-294 on Dempster Street in Des Plaines. For hours and more information, call 847-824-7411. And I'll just remind you, this time of the year, this is when you get the deals. Head on over. You can go to lurvys.com, L-U-R-V-E-Y-S. .com. And, you know, I know that we're still figuring out what to do with the pumpkins, but it's time to look ahead to the end of November. I know we get past Halloween. What's next? It's Thanksgiving. But right after Thanksgiving, Cantini Gardens in Wheaton presents its Shades of Crimson Poinsettia display at the Cantini Greenhouse. And they only open up the greenhouse a couple of times a year. On Tuesday, November 30th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., you can enjoy the eye-popping sight of more than 4,000 poinsettias all in one place at this annual open house. Cantini horticultural staff members will be on hand to discuss the plants and answer questions. Admission is free, and visitors should enter Cantini through the east. That's a Schaffner Road entrance. For more information, go to cantini.org. Now, of course, Cantini is spelled C-A-N-T-I-G-N-Y. All right, we got to pick one of these a little Halloween CD roulette courtesy of Heather Fry. Is this your theme song, Heather?
Only on Halloween, and if I'm really in a bad mood.
Let's go to line one and bring in our meteorologist, Rick DeMaio. Happy Halloween, Rick.
Yeah, happy Halloween, Mike. And hey, Mike, have you ever had like a bad Halloween party or gone to a bad Halloween party?
What's a bad Halloween party?
Well, that's the kind of party where you go there and you get carved out of watermelon instead of a pumpkin.
Where's my rim shot? Ba-dum-bum.
And, you know, instead of, I mean, what do you normally bob for at Halloween parties?
Apples.
Yeah, okay, you're bobbing for turnip.
or I know, or Osage oranges.
Yeah. Or you go there and the only thing they offer is high fiber candy.
Well, you know, that's like in the old days when I was a kid, if people gave you apples, you'd go back out and throw them against their house.
Oh, yeah, we did. There was one house that was covered in sauce. And then the added insult to injury was she had candy bars underneath the apples in the bowl.
Oh, right.
So I think a few kids went for her windows.
Now, I'm not encouraging people to throw apples because now as an adult, I realize that apples, they are decent fiber.
They're
good for you. And you don't want to go throwing stuff against somebody's house.
Yeah. But nobody gives apples out anymore. You're not supposed to give out any homemade things or any produce.
Right.
Everything's supposed to be store-bought and sealed.
Wrapped within an inch of its life.
Right. Yeah. So the days of the sweet old granny and her old popcorn balls at the end of the corner, sadly, are long gone. I miss
all
those days.
Along, really. So Mike, you and I getting up in age, right? So you know you're...
I beg your pardon.
You know you're too old for Halloween costumes when you're carefully choosing one that is not going to dislodge your hairpiece, right?
What was this Halloween party ad?
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's the Rick DeMaio joke book.
I'm just trying to have some fun here. And I guess, you know, all right, so since we're on the joke book thing here, and I just they're just coming to me. I'm not prepared at all. So why so why are teachers so happy about Halloween? Why?
I don't know, Rick. Why are teachers so happy?
There's a lot of school spirit running around. All right, I'm done.
I hope so.
I did have one more, but I don't think you like them. That's okay.
No, give me one more. Just one more.
All right, right. What's the one room in the house where you will not find ghosts?
Where I will not find what?
Ghosts.
Ghosts?
Ghosts, yeah.
I don't know.
The living room.
Ah!
Okay, that's all the time we have, folks.
I knew you'd see. I'm trying to make you think about the fact that both Michigan and Michigan State got absolutely obliterated yesterday.
No, wait a second.
I didn't want to mention it.
Michigan lost, but Michigan State got obliterated.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, talk about parity in the Big Ten, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. So they're not going to. So yeah. Let's just put it this way. No Big Ten team is playing for the national championship. So we can move on.
Right. We can move on. Yeah. Do you want to talk about this big storm that blew through here on Tuesday and Wednesday?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It was. You know, the thing about it is I'm driving into work on Tuesday morning. Everybody's talking about the worst cyclone in 70 years. I'm thinking, I don't know if it's going to be the worst, because the way I like to classify storms on a scale of 1 to 10, there's three different categories. How windy they are, basically the dynamics, how moist they are, basically precipitation, and how cold they are, so you're looking at temperature. So I'll let you answer the question. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 not being windy and 10 being windy, how windy was this storm?
I'd say an 8.
Oh, Heather, you can go all the way up to the top on this one, Chuck.
Yeah.
Is it 10?
Oh, yeah. 9, 10?
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt, a 9.
All right.
Without a doubt, a 10. A 10. 9.5 to 10. Okay?
Well, you know what? The thing was, people were saying that it was hurricane-force winds. Well, you're saying no.
No, we had a couple of wind gusts above, you know, 60 miles per hour. But the thing about it is, I don't think you can just take 1 or 2 hours out of a 48-hour event and say we had hurricane-force winds. And I'm not trying to belittle the storm, but, you know, continuing on what I was talking about.
Because it
speaks
really highly of you. So.
Thanks very much. So the next one is precipitation. Out of the 2 days the storm was with us, how many hours of rain did we have?
Not very much.
No, not at all.
Like 2 hours. And did we leave our cars? Did we leave our houses? Did we leave our workplaces after the rain had stopped? And were we chipping ice? Were we shoveling snow? Was the next day we were going out to our cars and our door locks were frozen? Were we doing that?
No.
No. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate this from a standpoint of precipitation and nuisance to the overall public?
It depends whether your tree fell on your house.
Okay, I'm going to get into that as well.
I'd put it, though, on a nuisance level for me, a 5 or 6. I was waiting for the end of days.
I would say even less.
I'd probably put it even less.
It was annoying.
It was more the media that was annoying.
Right. But seriously, Heather and Mike, this was probably about a 2 or 3 from a standpoint of precipitation. Okay, now temperature, okay? 70 degrees Tuesday morning. By Wednesday afternoon, we're in the low 50s. But by Wednesday, I should say, not by Tuesday afternoon, low to mid 50s. By Wednesday, we're back up in the low to mid 60s. So did it really get that cold afterwards? No. So it didn't even get down to, like, bone-chilling cold on Thursday, even though it was kind of, you know, chilly out. So I think temperature-wise, this would probably go down at maybe a 2 or 3 as well. You add those up, you divide by 3, you get a storm ranking of about 6.5 or 7. So what I think was happening was this storm the deepest ever in the state history of Wisconsin and Minnesota? Yes, okay? But that's also pretty far away, okay? And a lot of that cold air never made it down here. A lot of the rain and snow stayed basically across North Dakota. Did we have 2 tornadoes? Yes. Was there a lot of wind? Yes. But you know what, Mike? This is interesting. There wasn't a lot of tree damage because the ground is so dry.
Ah.
The root system is so intact. And because the leaves were just basically blowing off the trees, we didn't really have much in the way of any strong leaves holding on to the trees right now. So we didn't even have any real branches down. That was the interesting thing I found about this. We talked about this last week, how dry it's been. So the dryness leading up to the storm really, I think, helped a lot of trees stay in the ground and a lot of branches from remaining on the trees as well. So
that's I'll tell you what, Rick, we got a great arborist in the room. Do you want to comment on that guy at all?
Well, I think he's right. First of all, the season, the leaves were starting to get ready to fall to absize, so a lot of them just did blow off. The other thing about leaves is when you have these mature leaves and the wind starts to hit a tree, the leaves, instead of remaining flat and catching the wind, will tend to curl downwind and let the wind pass through. It's just a natural thing that trees do. So they can fool you. You have a lot more damage in the spring when you have this soft new growth, and you have a lot more damage probably in other times of the year when you have ice storms, obviously. But these winds, if the root system is intact and the tree is sound, trees are evolved to take this type of thing.
Yeah, you know, sitting on my back porch watching the trees in my yard and in other yards, I'm always amazed also how elastic trees are and how much they bend and don't give. And they're more, you know, you don't see trees snap very much. You'll see them more likely to pull out of the ground. And as you said, Rick, there wasn't enough moisture to allow that to happen.
Right. I always remember back, Mike, back to that event in August of, I believe it was 2008, when we had probably 3,000 trees come down in the Chicagoland area with that massive wind of severe weather. And it was preceded by about 3 weeks of very, very heavy rain. And I remember up in the Lakeview, Greenview area, where you had basically five or six large trees, just pretty much the whole root ball just got pulled right out of the ground. Because it was such a healthy, very wet spring and summer, the leaves were actually like your guest was showing. I missed his name, and I'm sorry
Guy.
About
Guy
that.
Sternberg.
Guy. Guy was right about the fact that the leaves, when they're very healthy, they catch the wind. They almost act like sails on a ship, and they basically pull the tree straight down. So I think, I was thinking about this, and I mentioned this to my Loyola class Wednesday and Thursday night. I think even though the public was kind of walking around saying, okay, it's windy, but is this the worst storm in 70 years? I think as meteorologists, we have to remember that you just can't say that because the storm is deep, it's going to be the worst. So this is where, in this day and age of 24/7 media, you have to be a little bit better prepared as a scientist to equate information into knowledge. You have to be able to say, yes, this is going to be the biggest storm or the windiest storm, but these are the things that I think are not going to be as bad. I even mentioned this to my aviation students at Lewis University. Even though O'Hare was shut down for an hour Tuesday morning, once the storm passed and the clouds lifted, the wind was right down the runways, and O'Hare was landing planes on both runways, and there was actually no crosswind. And they were going, wow, that's kind of cool, because I can leave here saying to myself, yeah, this was the windiest storm in 70 years, but from an operational standpoint at O'Hare, they were actually doing okay by late in the afternoon. And this is where I think scientists and people in the media have to be a little bit better prepared and a little bit more on guard, because I think people, I think of the average listener and the average viewer is just smarter these days and has access to more information, and therefore I think it puts us on guard even more.
Well, you're absolutely right, and that's why I'm glad you say these things and alert us to the idea that don't just accept, you know, and we got to move on, but I will say one thing. I was watching the other day, somebody was doing a forecast on one of the local TV stations, and he was talking about how we might be having a little rain. He said, oh, don't worry, it won't get in the way of anything, and I'm yelling at the screen, we need rain.
Right.
You know, rain does not equal bad.
Right.
You know, and that
right.
is the mentality right. of the TV right. forecasters. Rain right. equals bad. That's right. not, right. It's just, you know, get over that. Let's get past that because we're smarter than that. So what right. do we got coming up this week, Rick?
Well, so far, Mike, the pattern has actually remained pretty much steady state. We now have two hurricanes, Hurricane Sherry and Hurricane Thomas. Thomas is now a Category 2. That's the 18th named storm of the season, the most since 2005, and outside of 2005, the most in 25 years. So I still think that the tropics are playing a role in keeping us from getting real cold. So we're going to stay seasonal. We're going to stay dry. And matter of fact, I don't see anything in the way of any significant rain coming at us for the next 5 days. And once again, I really think the tropics and the way the pattern across the Pacific Ocean is keeping the jet stream generally north of us, and I still look back at the storm from this past Tuesday and Wednesday. If you put this thing about 500 miles south, we'd be looking out the window right now at about 6 inches of snow on the ground, because it probably would have been a snowy system on the backside. So we're still, even though this is the end of October, we're still kind of in an early October pattern, even though I know it's kind of cool today. Temperatures probably seasonal, which is right around 50 to 55 next 5 days, and nothing in the way of any substantial rain until the oceans, or at least I should say the tropics, begin to quiet down. And I don't remember the last time we've gotten to a hurricane with the letter S or T, but it's been a while. Actually, it's been since 2005.
Wow.
One thing I'm worried about is because all that cold air is pushed up northward, as what happened that year in December of 2005, we had an incredibly snowy and very, very cold winter. At least the first half, that was the year that Southwest Airlines plane went down at Midway.
Right.
Hopefully we won't get a repeat of that, but it definitely looks dry for the next 5 days.
There we go. Rick DeMaio, weather, always on the Mike Novak Show, sometime after 9:30. great stuff. Thank you, Rick. We will talk next week.
Okay, jokes at all.
Oh, and the jokes were the best. They're being retweeted as we speak. They're all over the Twitter sphere,
yes,
right?
Yes, your jokes are being retold on Twitter, Rick.
That's just...
Like I said, scientists these days have to retool them.
We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye. And, of course, a guy that just... it's just one more confirmation that we need to water our trees in, especially the young ones and evergreens that are going to be transpiring over the winter. I mean, this is really a pretty significant dry spell.
Yeah, and some areas are hitting it and having it a lot worse than others. There have been scattered rains. You know, we haven't been too bad down in Central Illinois. We had some dry July. We had some dry September. But there is, down in Cincinnati and Louisville, I mean, they haven't had rain for 12 years, I don't think. It's just total desert down there. They have major old trees that are stressed and dying. They're trying
wow.
to...
Because, yeah, even an old tree at some point is going to run out of moisture.
Sure. Well, the roots seek a certain level in the soil where they can get moisture and air. And as the moisture drops, if the roots can't keep up with it, you know, roots can't grow 20 feet down where there's a water table. They have to grow up in the edge.
Let me take this, do this, and we'll finish the conversation. It's not every day that a horticultural company is founded with these goals: to create a unique product that stops deer damage, make the product as environmentally friendly as possible, and make sure the results would be so impressive that word of mouth would sell the products. That's what Greg Exidy did with Bob-X, and 20 years later, he has achieved what he set out to do. And meanwhile, the Bob-X company has found ways to keep deer and other animals at bay, including rabbits, groundhogs, squirrels, chipmunks, voles, you know the list. All Bob-X products are harmless to wildlife, including aquatic species. They contain no petrochemical or synthetic components. Bob-X doesn't wash off in the rain or from irrigation, and it's an anti-desiccant, too, which you can use for the winter. Don't look for Bob-X products in a box store. Look for them in a Bob-X store, meaning your local independent garden center. You can find Bob-X at Shades of Green Nursery in Chicago, Illinois, Fields Nursery in Crest Hill, Illinois, Alsip Home and Nursery in Frankfort, Illinois. Remember, plants thrive and survive with Bob-X. And speaking of trees, here's a tip from the Care of Trees. What makes the Care of Trees different from other tree care companies? Well, something they do called soil care. Now, fertilizing trees is really a short-term fix. You put the nutrients down, and yes, they help the plants out at that time, but then they're used up or they dissolve and get into our water sources. Soil care is about using organics and compost teas to improve the health of your trees over the long haul. In addition, using soil care techniques keep synthetic nitrogen out of our lakes and streams. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. You got to say you rang again.
You rang.
Guy Sternberg from Star Hill Forest Arboretum down Menard County Way. And we just got a couple of minutes here. What do we miss about all the cool stuff that goes on in cemeteries with trees that you'll be teaching at the Morton Arboretum this afternoon at 1 o'clock?
Well, we will be looking at iconography. We'll be looking at history. We'll be looking at geographical variation around the country. And like I say, we're also maybe going to be haunted there. You never know what might happen.
You keep hinting that maybe there will be a special guest. You know, it's like when you do something at Christmas and everybody goes, well, you know, maybe somebody in a red suit will show up.
Well, I would just advise people with pacemakers not to come.
Cool.
Is that because of you?
I keep getting like the Headless Horseman's going to go riding through the place.
You never know.
Awesome.
Oh, real quick, like in a minute, the Kewaunee Osage Orange.
Sure, the Kewaunee Osage Orange is one of the first ones planted. It's a historical tree. As you know, Mike, we both visited the site. It was starting to lean.
During the tour of the trees, yeah.
Right, yeah. And it's a historic tree that has been starting to tilt. The city was worried about it, so we worked with the city to do some pruning. We're trying to do some stabilization on it now, and we hope to come back in the future and put in some interpretive signing and so forth. It's a major landscape element for the city, a landmark tree, and it certainly has a lot of important history.
And you're still getting a lot of cooperation from the city, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. The city, various arborists. There are a lot of people who are involved with this. And the city really wanted to save the tree. They're still unsure how to do it. So we're working with them to help them.
Yeah. And there's links to it on my website. There's links to Guy and Star Hill Forest Arboretum. Go to MikeNowak.net, MikeNowak.net. This week's show, it'll be up on the podcast later on today. Guy, pleasure having you here at the beautiful Showcase Studios.
Well, I'm glad I finally made it. As you know, this is Halloween, so I wanted to scare you by arriving a half minute before the show.
See, you didn't even have to bust yourself, but that's okay. I appreciate it. That's Guy Sternberg. All right, in the second hour of the show, we're going to start with the elections and what the environmental endorsements are from Illinois Sierra Club and Environment Illinois. I hope you stick around for that.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
And, of course, that is the mantra for anybody who grows plants. It goes something like this.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
That's what I say.
Mm-hmm.
Who have we got our...
We've got Mr. Darren on the phone, and I'm getting Max.
Okay.
Next.
Let's get Max Muller on. Let's go to line one and talk to Jack Darren from Illinois Sierra Club. How you doing, Jack?
Good morning, Mike. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you. What you going to do?
I've got a full slate here of little campaign work, some trick-or-treating.
I know. It's always interesting, don't you think, that Halloween comes just before an election?
Yeah, it is. I don't know if there's probably a lot of good jokes there.
Yeah, there are.
There's and goblins and
scary stuff.
Yeah.
And on and on and on. But in particular this year, Halloween seems to be scary, but not as scary as the election.
Yeah. I think that's especially on a beautiful day like today. Halloween seems like a really great day, but
it's pretty benign. Yeah.
Tuesday, maybe not so much. It's obviously going to be a tough election, and people have lots of good reasons to be angry, but we're hoping that the fact that we're moving forward on clean energy and the environment here in Illinois is not one of the things that voters are angry about.
I was thinking, actually, I was on the way into work today, and by the way, let me go right now to line two. And
hi, this is Max.
Hey, Max. It's Mike, and you're Max. Max is from Environment Illinois. Good to have you guys both on. One of the things that struck me as I was driving in to the station today was the idea that there are swing voters, you know, the people who haven't made up their minds. And I keep thinking, now, obviously, you can't do as the pollsters love to do, look at things in general, because every race is specific. And the whole, generally, would I vote Democratic or Republican, seems to me nonsense. But the other thing that seems nonsense to me is the idea that you can have so many undecideds when so many of the choices are so clear. And somebody's sitting and they don't, you know, I'd have to ask the question, wait a second, you don't see that this one person feels this strongly about what they're going to do, and the other one feels the opposite way, and you haven't made up your mind which one you want to go with? Don't you have any opinions at all the rest of the time? It just seems a little strange to me that there could be so many undecideds when so many of the positions are so different.
Well, Mike, of course, you're assuming there that people are paying attention and are finding out those positions. But especially this year, with the incredible flood of new kind of secret money that's coming into the campaign commercials here, for most people, through no fault of their own, really, other than the fact that they're busy people, this boils down to the way the races are framed in TV commercials. Are you going to vote for the liar or the thief, the bumbler or the scary right winger? And for a lot of people, they are undecided because I think inherently they know that not to believe commercials, and they're not getting the facts that they need to base those decisions.
Yeah, but Jack, you know, my point, and I've made it before on this show, is that I would like to believe that most people don't believe the commercials, that they know that commercials, I mean, in 30 seconds, what do you learn about a candidate? If you don't actually read up and go to their websites and see their position papers and hear their debates, how do you know anything at all? If you're making your decision based on a 30-second commercial, you are an uninformed voter.
I totally agree, and that's why I've found that, you know, thanks so much for talking about these issues here today, because for the last couple of months, as we talk to, you know, Sierra Club members and other people that we know care a lot about the environment, they haven't thought about clean energy, clean air, clean water in the context of these choices, and a lot of them are still undecided, and when they hear the facts, we think that it's changing their minds.
All right, well, let's get to that, because you're talking about clean energy, clean water, and I know that both organizations, Environment Illinois and the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club, make endorsements. You guys are unlike a lot of environmental organizations that are not permitted to do that because of their tax statuses, and I'd like to ask, and I'll start with Max, what kind of methodology do you use for putting these choices together?
Sure. Yeah, so I'm Max Muller. I'm the director of Environment Illinois, and we're a nonpartisan environmental advocacy group. We do advocacy to try to adopt good policies to protect the environment in Illinois, stop global warming, protect the Great Lakes, protect our parks and open spaces. And we've just learned through experience that in addition to getting citizens to contact our legislators and going down to Springfield and educating lawmakers about environmental problems and solutions, it really matters who's in office and whether elected officials care about the environment and are willing to champion measures to protect the environment. And so 2 years ago, we started a process to endorse candidates, to consider candidates running for office and look at their environmental records. And in cases where there's a clear difference between the candidates and how they stand on environmental issues, recommend to our members which ones are going to be better champions for protecting the environment. And we started small. Sierra Club does this a lot more than we do. They're really the leading group doing endorsements in Illinois. But we have this year looked at three congressional races, the governor's race and the U.S. Senate race. And in all those cases, we looked at both candidates. We looked at their voting histories. We ask the candidates to fill out questionnaires on environmental issues, and in most cases, we interview the candidates. And in all the races we looked at, there are clear distinctions between the candidates. And so we've endorsed Pat Quinn for governor, Alexi Genulius for the U.S. Senate, and we've endorsed in three congressional races. We're endorsing Debbie Halverson for Congress in the 11th District down in Joliet and southern Cook County and Will County. Dan Seals for Congress along the lake in the 10th Congressional District, and Phil Hare for Congress in the 17th Congressional District out along the Mississippi River. And in all of those cases, these are pro-environmental champions with a track record of supporting key environmental issues and some of the huge, great bills that have passed that are cleaning up the environment in Illinois and the country. And their opponents, in a lot of cases, have not only not championed these things, but been obstructionists to them. And so making our endorsements, there was a clear distinction, and we're confident in recommending that these candidates will likely be much better for the environment.
And as you pointed out to me, Max, you're just doing a few, those five endorsements this year. I assume in 2012 you're going to expand that?
We think that it really matters who's in office. And so part and parcel to participating in the legislative process and trying to educate policymakers about good policies, it's also necessary to engage in the electoral process to make sure that voters are aware of the key differences on environmental issues and where these candidates stand.
All right.
So we would like to do more in the future.
Jack, he mentioned, we can start with some of these particular campaigns. For instance, the governor's race. In my experience, Pat Quinn is an environmentalist. But I went to look at Rich Whitney's page, and he's got some pretty good ideas, and he talks a good game. How is it? All right, I'll be blunt. Do you take into consideration a candidate's realistic chance of winning an election?
We do. Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the criteria that we use. I mean, the record is the most important thing. We are environmentalists first, and electoral advocates certainly second. But you got to look at the politics of the race and how things shake out. But I think in this case, we support a lot of the goals of the Green Party platform as it relates to clean energy and sustainability, and we endorse Green Party candidates from time to time. But I think in the governor's race, if you are voting or thinking about voting for Rich Whitney because of his environmental positions and because you want the state to be an environmental leader, then Pat Quinn is, I think, the Green candidate for governor. He is certainly the greenest governor that we've had in our history, and I think that, given the current state of our politics, the greenest candidate we're likely to have for any time in the future. I mean, in less than 2 years, he's really helped spur a total turnaround in Illinois energy policy from, just a few years ago, we used to just throw money at coal and nuclear and hope for the best, and now we are among the nation's leaders in wind and solar and energy conservation. We had a Department of Natural Resources that was just gutted after a decade of Rod Blagojevich and George Ryan, and he's appointed qualified professionals there, turning that agency around. So, in some very difficult circumstances, when probably few could have blamed him if he turned his attention elsewhere, given our fiscal and economic and ethical crises. He's really made the environment a priority. We've already created 10,000 jobs in the clean energy economy in Illinois, and we really think it's crucial that we keep that momentum going. You look at Bill Brady, the guy who was one of only 13 senators in the state Senate who voted against those 10,000 clean energy jobs, who's promised to cut the Department of Natural Resources budget by 20%. So we really run the risk not only of sort of stalling out, but actually going backwards and going back to the days where we pretty much burned all the coal we could, kept the nukes running, and called that an energy policy.
I'm looking at Brady. I normally am a kind of guy, and progressives are not going to want to hear this, but I tend to think that in some ways it's better if they can duke it out and have each party has significant representation. Because I guess they kind of agree with Obama in this, that it's all about compromise and you get what's best for your people. And in Illinois, a lot of people would look and say, well, you know, Democratic Party pretty much runs everything. So maybe we should have a Republican governor. But in this case, I just think that's a scary proposition. And I think you're right, Jack, in that he will roll the clock back in so many ways, especially in terms of the environment, that we can't afford to have him as governor of this state. Max, you want to weigh in on this?
Well, yeah, I would just second a lot of what Jack said. I mean, I think it is a choice between moving forward or moving backwards. On environmental issues, just take two of the most, I would say, environmental issues that have people are the most concerned about in Illinois. One of the issues that our members are most concerned about is the health of the state park system and protected parks and open spaces. And under Blagojevich, there were fund raids, a lack of willingness to really take on the state's budget problems. And instead, we had a problem where funding was being shifted around to fill budget holes in kind of an ad hoc basis, and it resulted in the closure of 14 state parks. Governor Quinn, as lieutenant governor, really led the charge to open those parks again. He led the charge for funding to reopen seven of those parks. When he became governor, seven of them were still closed, and one of the first things he did in office was reopen them. If you contrast that with Bill Brady, I think the contrast is huge. Bill Brady would cut funding to the Department of Natural Resources, which maintains these parks and is already a beleaguered state agency. And so the contrast is huge. Or if you're worried about green jobs and building a clean energy economy, there's a huge potential in Illinois to rebuild the economy with clean energy jobs. We've already started doing this. We've got national wind companies headquartered in Chicago. We've got, just this summer, Pat Quinn signed into law two new bills that are going to create 5,000 solar energy jobs in the state of Illinois. And if you look at Bill Brady, the single biggest test of whether he shares this vision of creating green energy jobs through clean energy, he failed his single biggest test by voting against the renewable energy standard that, is, as Jack said, has created already 10,000 clean energy jobs in this state. So the contrast is very clear on environmental issues.
And I would add to that list high-speed rail, which Governor Quinn has aggressively been pursuing. I didn't see, you know, it didn't look like that was going to happen in this state. And right now a lot of money is being put into that. And that is also creating jobs and will create more jobs. We're talking to Max Muller from Environment Illinois, Jack Darren from Illinois Sierra Club. Let's move on to, and of course, we're looking at some of the races, and they are environmental organizations, and so we're looking at the environmental aspect. Obviously, there's other aspects to these races. One more thing I want to say about the governor's race, and I think in a certain way you can liken what Pat Quinn is dealing with right now to what President Obama got dumped in his lap. You know, Obama came into office with a $1.2 trillion deficit that was left by George Bush. And, of course, Pat Quinn came into office with billions of dollars in debt and a scandal left by Rod Blagojevich. It's, you know, when you got somebody who's got to try to pick up the pieces, that's a tough road to hoe. And I think he's worked as hard as he can, and I agree with your stance on his environmental issues. All right, let's move to the U.S. Senate race, and that's Junilius and Mark Kirk. Jack, you want to start with this?
Sure. You know, Mark Kirk is a guy that we know a lot about. The Sierra Club actually, at a few points over the last decade, have supported Mark Kirk. There were times when he stepped out and showed some leadership within his party on environmental issues, but I think that those days sort of ended a year ago, June, when he was one of eight Republicans to vote for climate action on the cap-and-trade bill. And then shortly after that, he's running for U.S. Senate, and moved far to the right. Not only pledged that he made the wrong vote there, but promised that he would never vote for carbon caps if he were elected Senate. He said that vote was in the quote-unquote narrow interests of the North Shore, but against the statewide interests of Illinois, which I thought was sort of flies in the face of everything we've been talking about, the job creation potential for the state, but also sort of insulting to folks on the North Shore to call their interest in solving global warming narrow. I don't know, and since then he's really moved pretty far to the right. When he talks about energy, which is not very often, he talks about wanting to burn all the coal we can, to build 50 nuclear power plants, really talking about the energy policies of George Bush. So that was very disappointing. And then we have Alexei Janulis, on the other hand, who, frankly, as state treasurer, we didn't pay a lot of attention because environmentalists didn't used to think about that as an office that had anything to do with protecting the environment. But Alexei approached us, and together we devised some programs to help get people into cleaner cars. He had a $1,000 hybrid rebate program, some new lending programs to help businesses go green with smart energy solutions, jumped into the legislature with us on a lot of our big clean energy bills, and I think really a guy who, at a time when the pundits are telling us that candidates aren't talking about global warming or energy anymore, he really continues to make clean energy and putting a price on carbon at the center of his campaign. I've been really proud to see how he's done that, and I hope that he makes it on Tuesday. It's going to be real close, but if we have Alexei as our next senator, we're going to have someone who's not only a strong environmentalist, but really a true progressive down the line, who at a fairly young age is a guy who's likely to be there for a long time and be a real important leader for our country.
I just got tweeted here, Jack, and the tweet is, Mark Kirk was responsible for the acquisition of the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve. He is the greenest, in quotes here, Republican out there. What would you say about that?
I would say that that's true. I think that Kirk has done some good things. I think that he talks a very good game, certainly, and I think that you've seen his ads, you've heard him talk about how he stood up for Lake Michigan. I think that he talks about the BP situation a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
BP wanted to put more ammonia in Lake Michigan. I mean, one of the core accomplishments he's running on in this race is that he stopped BP, or he defeated them. But the facts are that he did join just about everybody who was elected to anything back in 2007 in saying, I'm for Lake Michigan. But that battle's far from over, and actually the permit that we all protested together back then was granted, and we don't have any commitment from BP to actually not put that pollution in the lake. So I think that it's kind of emblematic of Kirk's tendency to take a position and an accomplishment and kind of exaggerate it, blow it out of proportion.
He's done a little bit of that, hasn't he?
He has a little bit of that.
Yeah.
I think that he's someone who, I don't know, sometimes you're more disappointed in the people who understand the need for action who promise not to, you know, as opposed to, say, the climate deniers who kind of have this ideologically simple position where they can be against it. For a guy to say that he knows that climate change is a problem, but on the other hand refuses and promises not to do anything about it is almost more frustrating to us.
And here's another tweet that Alexei has been a bit busy with other issues, quote, than to worry about the environment. Except that you said while he was treasurer, he had some issues that he dealt with in office there.
That he certainly didn't have to. I mean, as
I
said, the treasurer did nothing on the environment when Alexei got there. He made it one of his priorities in that office, and I think that's impressive. And if you're somebody who's looking for facts in this race, and you're actually among the few that watch the debates and read the articles, Alexei's talking about clean energy all the time in all the debates, as part of his job creation, as part of his environmental protection strategy, and we don't hear enough candidates up and down the ballot in this particular year doing that. So I think that's to his credit.
And I will say, and I'll turn it over to Max here, but one of the things I would note is that what worries me about Kirk is that I think he did speak more independently before, but now he's getting to the big seat, and I think the big boys are beating up on him, and he's going to be in lockstep with the Republicans, and the whole Republican agenda basically is to stop anything that happens, including a climate change bill. Max, you want to comment?
Well, I would say that's exactly what's happened with Kirk on climate change. He's basically flip-flopped. We were quite happy that he supported the 2009 bill to transition this country to clean energy and stop global warming. And as soon as he started running for Senate, he flip-flopped and said he would not support the bill, as Jack said, because he said that while it was in the interest of his 10th congressional district, it's not in the interest of Illinois. We've released many reports on the impacts of global warming. It's clearly in the interest of Illinois to address global warming, unless we want to have the climate of Houston in the summertime in 30, 40, 50 years. And it's just a totally irresponsible statement to change your position on probably what is the most fundamental and profound environmental issue. And I think it's true, as Jack said, it's almost harder when you have a candidate who it's pretty clear understands these issues and is taking the wrong side for political reasons. And it's kind of the same story on BP's pollution into Lake Michigan. When BP wanted to increase its pollution from its Whiting oil refinery into Lake Michigan, toxic ammonia, Mark Kirk was one of many politicians who scored political points by coming out strongly against this, and we supported that. We didn't want BP to increase its pollution, but now that it's no longer in the headlines, we still didn't make sure BP is going to come through and not increase its pollution. There was no law change that's going to guarantee that BP can't increase its pollution. All we had at the time was BP backing down, changing what it was saying it was going to do. But we need to hold them to that. And Kirk just hasn't been there.
It's every time we turn around, we seem to be saying, we need to hold BP to its statements that it's going to, whether it's about the Gulf, whether it's about Lake Michigan, and how do you hold big corporations accountable when they have so much money and they have so much influence in Congress? And the idea is that, and I agree with both of you, that we have to have, having a candidate like Mark Kirk who knows the issues and turning his back on it, you're right, that's worse than not understanding them.
And real quickly, Mike, as a candidate, that's one thing, but think about it, if Mark Kirk is our next senator, and I know you have a lot of listeners who are really engaged in these issues, it's a real leadership-type audience. Those of us in the environmental community, if we're looking at Mark Kirk as our senator, for the next 6 years, we're going to be faced with incredible amounts of effort to try to desperately see if there's any way that we could get Mark Kirk to sort of flip back to the Mark Kirk from years ago, who might support the environment on some of these huge issues that are going to be facing the next Congress. And that's just, at a minimum, going to be a tremendous amount of energy to maybe get him to vote our way occasionally. Mm-hmm. Contrast that with having a guy like Janulius, who we know is going to be with us from day one, and it's just going to be a totally different story.
All right, we just have a few minutes here. I know you guys need to go. I would like to bring up some races quickly that our listeners might not be aware of, some you find interesting. And one of the things I want to point out about Sierra Club in this is that you guys have endorsed candidates from all three parties. If you go to your website, which I have linked on my website, if you go to this week's show on MikeNovak.net, you will see that Sierra Club also endorses Green Party candidates, Republicans in some cases. Jack, let's start with you. What's out there that you think is under the radar?
I think a really interesting one is the race for state treasurer, because the polls show this race to be really close, and we've got someone here that we've endorsed, Robin Kelly. She happens to be a Democrat. Robin is someone who we first met when she was in the Illinois House, and she is a very articulate person who cares a lot about environmental justice and how making sure that the environmental agenda benefits all communities across the economic spectrum. She was a real environmental star in the Illinois House, left the House to serve as Janulius' chief of staff in the treasurer's office, and really was his right-hand woman in creating a lot of the programs we just talked about. she's really in a neck and neck race with Dan Rutherford from Downstate, who does not have a good environmental record, and I think it's a real promising fresh face as an Illinois statewide leader who's got a good green history. So I'm excited about Robin Kelly.
And, of course, Max, you mentioned that you've got three congressional races that you're keying in on. Can you give me short statements about those?
Yeah, sure. You know, two of the candidates that we endorsed, Debbie Halverson and Phil Hare out in the eastern part of the state, are both fairly new members of Congress. But in the short time that they have been in Congress, they have established track records as consistent environmental champions on some of the most profound environmental issues facing the country. So, you know, Illinois has a nation-leading law that is going to create clean energy jobs in this state and transition us away from dirty energy sources. And Debbie Halverson in the 11th District is a co-sponsor of a law to do the same thing at the national level. Both her and Phil Hare out in the eastern part of the state cast crucial votes in support of the bill to transition this country to clean energy, the American Clean Energy and Security Act, a cap-and-trade bill. They supported it when it mattered. Both championed investments in clean energy, energy efficiency, and clean transit in the economic recovery package, which is going to create, the estimates are about 100,000 jobs by the, or 148,000 jobs by the end of January in 2011. And these were hard stands. These were hard votes, votes that people have been criticized for, votes that people were wary to cast. And they stood for them and voted for the right thing. And Phil Hare out in the eastern part of the state, we actually looked at 15 different congressional votes on the most important environmental, you know, most important 15 environmental votes from a 16-month period. And he voted in support of the environment 100% of the time. It's a very consistent voting record. And so we have it's very clear that we should endorse these candidates. Especially when comparing them to their opponents, who are clear opponents of environmental protection. And then Dan Seals, up in the 10th Congressional District, who's been running for office. This is the third time he's run for office. Every single time while he's been running for office, he's talked about the need to create clean energy. He's talked about how creating clean energy and expanding transit and expanding energy efficiency, which are all the things we need to do to stop global warming, he's also talked about how those have the potential to create jobs and to transform the economy, our Rust Belt economy, our Midwest economy, into a 21st century economy where we're getting our energy from the wind and the sun, and it's American workers who are benefiting from its production. He sees environmental protection and economic recovery as one and the same, and it's a vision he's articulated consistently over his last three campaigns. And so we also endorse Dan Seals for Congress.
Before I let you both go, I was noticing, well, there's two races. One is the Cook County Board, where the Sierra Club has endorsed Tony Preckwinkle, and the DuPage Forest Preserve, where you've endorsed the Republican, Dewey Pirotti. I had a woman call last week in favor of Dennis Clark, the Democrat. What's influencing that vote or that recommendation, Jack?
Well, DuPage has really done an interesting thing over the last decade. They got so fed up with the way politics was messing with their forest preserves that they pulled their forest preserves out into a separate unit of government. Pirotti has been the president of the Forest Preserve District for that whole decade, and the difference in the preserves is amazing. If you go and see, the district has been very aggressive about protecting land from development, about restoring land, bringing back, you know, removing invasives, removing the influence of fire. So we really have got much healthier ecosystems and more of them in DuPage County since Pirotti took over the Forest Preserve District. In Cook County, we have our fingers crossed and really looking forward to working with Tony Preckwinkle to take the Cook County Forest Preserves, this amazing kind of sleeping asset of almost 75,000 acres within the heart of our city in Cook County, and really open it up again to visitors, to bring those same kind of restoration techniques. Preckwinkle gets that. What a tremendous asset. How lucky we are to have them. And I think she's going to be a great steward.
Well, the question I ask of that, because I have an interest in there, I often have Benjamin Cox on the program, Friends of the Forest Preserves. And one of the things that we've talked about over the years is separating that government, the Cook County Board, from the Cook County Forest Preserves. Is Toni Preckwinkle, if she's elected, going to work on that?
She has said that she's open to that. I think that she really, that's obviously our position, too, at Sierra Club. She said that she really wanted to get in there and learn how the forest preserves function before she jumped to that solution. But I think she's open to doing that, and it's something that's on the list of things she wants to explore. At a minimum, she knows the place is a mess. It needs to be upgraded from top to bottom, one way or the other, and separation may turn out to be the way that she chooses to go.
I will bring up the candidate, Tom Tresser, who's a Green Party for Cook County Board President and has proposed a number of green issues. What would stop you from endorsing him?
Yeah, I think that our endorsement is not one against Tom Tresser. I think that he's got some good ideas. We think that we endorsed Preckwinkle back in the primary as the one candidate, in a very kind of ugly election who was trying to take the high ground, talking about forest preserve issues. And certainly Roger Keats is someone we remember from way back in the day when he, in Springfield, was kind of one of our main enemies when we were trying to advance recycling and solid waste management legislation here in the state. So we certainly don't want to see Roger Keats back in government. And I just think Preckwinkle has the best chance to really expand the conversation from the city and the suburbs around our forest preserves in the greener Cook County.
That's Jack Darren from the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club, and Max Muller has also been with us from Environment Illinois. If you want to see the endorsements of both of those organizations, and keep in mind that it does focus around environmental issues, but I know a lot of, well, that's what my show is about, and that's why I'm doing this. You can go to my website, you can go to MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. You can also go to www.illinois.sierraclub.org/vote. That'll take you to theirs. And on Environment Illinois, it would be www.environmentillinois.org/issues/election-2010. But it'll be easier if you just go to my website. Gentlemen, thank you so much. I know you guys are busy and it's Halloween. You got to get with the family. Thank you so much for taking the time this morning.
Thank you very much. Everybody get out and vote on Tuesday.
Yeah, get out and vote. And Heather is agreeing with both of you. All right, take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Don't look now, but the November-December edition of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine just hit the stands, and it has the answer to every gardening question you have for your Zone 5 garden. In this issue, you'll read about the Birdman in suburban Aurora, who has created a garden sanctuary for wildlife of all kinds by planting hundreds of plants, many of them natives. And just because the weather's getting colder doesn't mean that you can't create breathtaking containers. You'll learn how. And speaking of containers, you can apply organic techniques to your favorite houseplants. Yes, Beth Botts actually wrote that story, and she'll tell you how in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. By the way, if you like to sing and annoy your friends, there's my annual group of holiday carols set to gardening lyrics. Trust me, they're very, very annoying. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on newsstands all over the area, but you can subscribe and have it delivered to your door. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. Now, your friends at Grand Street Gardens have some advice if you love birds. Who doesn't? It's getting cold, yeah. You want to keep the bird feeders full for the birds still making their way down south. Now, the ones that stay will appreciate it, too. And don't forget to keep a water supply handy. It's been so dry.
Birds need water not just for drinking, but to keep their feathers in top flight condition. You might even consider a water heater for your bird bath. Stop in at Grand Street Gardens, the explosion of color on Grand at Levitt in Chicago, for information, bird food, and supplies. Grand Street Gardens, your source for organic and earth-friendly products in the heart of the city.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
There's no doubt that fall is here and winter's not far behind. Your friends at Sid's Greenhouses want to remind you that time is running out if you plan to move those tropical houseplants indoors. I'm telling you, you know, if you haven't done yet, you're like me. You're way behind and running out of time. But you might have done what I said earlier, which is you take your plants, you put them in a holding area, your garage or stuff. Maybe they're still sitting there. And yeah, before you bring them in, you want to make sure they don't have any little critters on them. So you can pre-treat the plants with Fertilome Triple Action Plus. It's an organic insecticide, miticide, and fungicide all in one. Then follow up with systemic houseplant insect control from Bonide to protect even new growth for up to 8 weeks. And if you need to check or replace any of your plants, boy, go to SIDS for their selection of greenhouse plants, including tropicals, lucky bamboo, herbs, and exotics, plus decorative ceramic pots and pottery to give your indoor garden a new look. They're 50% off. SIDS has hundreds of styles and colors available. Guess what? We're getting on to Christmas as well. SIDS, Heather, you don't like that, huh?
I'm so not ready.
Well, we still got Halloween. We'll get through that today. November 12th through the 20th is SIDS Christmas Open House, where you'll find everything you need to start and finish your holiday home decorating. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills and Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. I think we should get Mr. Brown Thumb on the line, and we'll bring up our very first segment of good growing on the Mike Novak Show. If you haven't, and we'll talk about bulbs. One of the things we'll talk about in a second is bulbs, and if you haven't planted your spring blooming bulbs yet, well, you don't want to wait much longer. You also don't want them to end up as the main course for animals like voles and squirrels, so why not give them a dunk in Bob XR? The Bob XR formula creates an aromatic barrier. There's a word for you, aromatic barrier around the bulbs and prevents your friendly neighborhood critters from discovering them. Here's how you do it. Immerse spring blooming bulbs in concentrated Bob XR right out of the bottle. You allow the bulbs to soak for 3 to 5 minutes, remove the bulbs from the concentrate, and allow them to air dry. Then pop those babies in the ground. Bob X is harmless to humans, pets, birds, and aquatic life. It contains no petrochemicals, and it's made from natural and recycled ingredients. Of course, always read and follow label directions. Bob X is available only at your local independent garden center, and you can always order it online. And if you call Bob X, you're going to talk to a real live human being. Unbulbelievable! You can find Bob X products at Gardens for People in Geneva, Illinois, Anton's Greenhouse in Highland Park, Illinois, the Fields Nursery in Joliet, Illinois. And remember, plants thrive and survive with Bob X. Okay, I'm going to have you. What do you want to hear as we go into our?
Any of it works for me. It came from my house, so I'm happy.
Did we get the original? I asked for the Love Potion number 9. Did you ever find it?
That's in the system, and I forgot to load it in this morning.
Oh, thanks.
Sorry. Hang on.
Wait a second. We did. Now, here's I know the one we're going to do.
Perfect.
Okay, because this guy, the guy who sings the song, used to live behind my folks.
Get out!
In Warren, Michigan.
Mitch Ryder at the Detroit Wheels here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
God, I hit the post, too.
You sure did.
Apparently, yeah, that's the rumor. He, Mitch Ryder, lived
awesome,
like behind my folks in Warren, Michigan. I don't know. I think it was before he became famous.
I worked the North Halsted Street Halloween Parade a number of years ago, and that was my costume. I had a blue flapper dress, and I had flesh-toned devil horns that, like, stuck to my forehead. And I had the pearls and the diamond rings and everything in the song. And few people didn't get my costume, but one older gentleman, I was walking down the street, and he goes, "You're a devil in a blue dress." And I just, I could have kissed him full on the lips. It was, they just got it right away.
All you need is one person to get it.
One person.
That's it.
And I was like, thank you.
Let's go to line one and bring in our good growing correspondent, Mr. Brown Thumb. How are you, Mr. BT?
Good. How are you guys?
Great.
Just having a lot of fun this morning.
We got serious for a while with the election stuff, but we always have fun on this show. This is the first of our segment called Good Growing, and Mr. BT is going to be one of our regular correspondents. If you go to my website, mikenovak.net, I'm sorry, I didn't get the blog up yet. I'll do that this afternoon, and it'll be posted there. But you wrote a lot of stuff. You've got a lot of great links. We're going to whip through this pretty quickly, you start with using leaf mulch, garden stuff for the fall, and ornamental bulbs and saving seeds. Let's start with the saving seeds, because you did an excellent post on saving seeds on your blog site. Was that on Mr. Brown Thumb or Chicago Garden or both?
It was on Mr. Brown Thumb.
Mr. Brown Thumb. Yes. Talk to us a little bit about saving seeds.
Well, right now is the perfect time of the year to start saving seeds if you've never done it before.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of seeds left on the plants, and if you collect them now, you can set them aside to dry and store them for next winter. Or if you're lazy seed starter, you can plant now for the spring. If you have perennials, you can just collect your seeds from your perennials and direct sow them into the ground where you want them to grow, and you don't have to worry about giving them a cold treatment and making seed starting pots and dealing with seed starting soil and all the other nonsense that we deal with in the spring.
Do you have a list of some of those seeds on the post?
Yeah, there's lists of seeds that and instructions on how to collect them on the post.
Yeah. We've got some seeds right here in the studio. Heather brought in pumpkin seeds.
Homemade. Roasted in my family's kitchen.
I'm afraid to try any right now because I know they'll just stick in my throat.
Oh, they're so good.
I just roasted my own for the first time in my life like a week ago.
Really?
Or earlier. I think it was last week. My brother was making a pumpkin for my nephew. And I collected the seeds because they were going to throw them out. So I was thinking I'll roast them myself. But there was nothing inside the seed. It was just the shell. And so I was wondering why there was no seed inside the seed shell. And it was just the outer shell.
There's nothing? Wait a second. Is that the way pumpkins are?
No, they're not hollow.
No, wait a second.
Some like, inside the pumpkin, they get real thin.
I got.
There's consistency.
Oh, now I'm going to choke on this. Okay.
But aren't they good?
They're really good, though.
Aren't they really
these
good?
Would you add to these?
I'm not telling.
Oh. Okay. But, yeah, that's a really good point. In saving seeds, you don't necessarily have to throw them in the refrigerator or something like that. Sometimes the best thing is just throw them on the ground and get them to germinate for the spring.
Exactly. And those come up on their own, so you don't have to worry about them. And after a while, they'll just acclimate to coming back on their own. And like sunflowers, I've saved all my sunflower seeds, and I don't really know why I do that, because the birds will eat them, and then they scatter some of the seeds, and then they come back on their own in the spring. And they sprout before you're even supposed to take them outside, after you sprout them indoors and then you acclimate them to outside. The ones that have fallen to the ground are already sprouting up before you're even ready.
Well, yeah, because nature's smarter than we are.
Exactly.
Yeah. You also talk about planting ornamental bulbs, and, we're getting towards the end of that, because you really want to get a root system established for a bulb as it goes into winter. It always depends on how warm the ground is.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm just saying that, sometimes we go well into December and we don't have a hard freeze. Who knows what's going to happen this year? We just don't know. I will cop to something, and that is, one year, I had forgotten I had these bulbs. Actually, I was just lazy and didn't get to them. I planted them on, January 15th, and they came up. It's just amazing. But plants want to live. Now, I don't advise that, and you're not going to find it in any book, but I've been known to plant them really late in the year. But if you really want to get it done right, you want to do it right now, right?
Yeah. You want to get them in, like you said, so that they can start their root system, mm-hmm. and they can survive over the winter. You could also, plant them into the ground, you can plant them in containers, large pots. If you just have small pots, you can keep those in an unheated area, like a crawl space or a garage or semi-unheated area.
Yeah, the one thing you got to be careful about containers is that you don't allow the bulb.
Don't let them freeze.
Yeah, don't let them freeze because they'll turn to mush.
Yeah.
And some people plant them in containers and then they stick the containers in the ground.
Right.
I'm thinking
sort of like you could cheat sort of the way the city does it. I know in the springtime, like the tourists are amazed by this, that they walk up and down Michigan Avenue and they see the people like unpotting the tulips, taking the plastic pots off and then just dumping like a potted tulip into the planters. And then they're like, well, you guys plant tulips from pots into the ground, and we're like, well.
Well, but they also do bulbs. Yeah. You know, I've seen them planting the bulbs on Michigan Avenue, and that's an interesting sight. We've got
Twitter's exploding.
Yeah,
you two right now.
Yeah, they love you, Mr. BT.
Yes, they do.
Love hearing your voice. Let's quickly move on to a couple of other things. You said that the 70-foot blue spruce from McHenry has been chosen to be Chicago's Christmas tree.
Correct.
What's the news on? I didn't actually see the article.
Well, again, the link's going to be on your website.
Yeah.
But instead of putting on the usual big Christmas tree display downtown, they're again choosing, I guess, a cheaper alternative, it is more sustainable because at one point the tree's going to have to come down because the area that it's in now mm-hmm. is going to be developed. So the owner of the land and the tree has donated it to the city so that it can be our Christmas tree.
And I note that the Chicago Wilderness Congress is coming up. That's this week on Thursday.
Correct.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, they're going to be doing a lot of focusing on health issues and how these things affect us, like climate change, Leave No Child Inside. Seems like a pretty good event.
I'm kind of interested that you brought up is the Black Farmers and Urban Gardeners Conference, but it's not in Illinois, it's in New York. I'm wondering why you added that.
Well, because that's something that I think we don't talk about enough, I think, in the city. I mean, we have a lot of herb farms in Chicago, and we have a lot of community gardens in African-American neighborhoods, but yet we don't really see a lot of African-Americans when we talk about gardening in the general context. Mm-hmm. And I know it's later in the month, and it's something that I would go to because it's not just for African Americans, it's for urban gardeners too. It's the Black Farmers and Urban Gardeners Conference.
Yeah.
So it's something that I would go to if I could do it.
And all the information is on my website, mikenovak.net/this week. I told you these were going to be short. We get as much information out as we can, but Mr. Brown Thumb's going to be back in the future, and we'll mix it up with some other folks who are very knowledgeable. A pleasure having you here. Thanks for writing all this stuff.
It's posted
on my website and on my blog, and we will talk real soon, Mr. BT.
All right.
Take care. If you went there. Oh, here's a tip from the Care of Trees. There was a mighty wind a-blowing this week. It was very interesting talk that Rick DeMaio had. Did your trees make it through okay? One of the reasons they might have is there's not enough moisture in the soil. Did you wonder what you would do if one of them took a hit? Here's something you should know. The Care of Trees has 24-hour emergency service. You saw what storms can do to trees, large and small, but many people don't know how dangerous it is to remove or prune those trees yourself, especially if a tree falls on a car. Other structures, power lines, or even other trees. The point is that the Care of Trees offers a 24-hour emergency service to assist in performing the job safely while minimizing further risk to your property. The Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years and shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their businesses, people, and their love for trees.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Didn't get a chance. What number is that?
Number three.
Which one's
the new one?
And the new one. That's an okay. Number three. We're looking at number three.
Number three.
Didn't get a chance to be what you really wanted for Halloween, which was probably a tree shrub or a walking pile of ornamental grasses. Always my favorite costumes. No worries. Go out and buy the real thing this fall planting season, and you'll have a costume all ready for next year. Move over, Lady Gaga. Lurvy Landscape and Garden Center in Des Plaines at 2550 East Dempster has shrubs, evergreens, and ground covers on sale 30% off, as well as select arbors, trellises, fountains, and pottery for 50% off. And with a $25 purchase, you'll receive a free bag of Bayer tree and shrub planting mix. Lurvy's also has the hot pink Invincible Spirit Hydrangea. You can still get that in the ground. The first ever pink Annabelle hydrangea, hardy enough to make it through the winter. So get your fall planting treats and maybe next year's Halloween getup at Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center just east of I-294 on Dempster and Des Plaines. For hours and more info, visit lurvys.com, L-U-R-V-E-Y-S.com, or for directions, you can get them online or you can call them, 847-824-7411. All right, you ready for this, Heather?
Yes.
All right, here's the deal. Heather put this together, and we don't have time to do the whole thing. We're going to start it now, but when we leave the studio, we're going to start taping it, and it's going to be on my website. All right, so here we go. Now gather around, children. Let me tell you a tale of a gardener gone mad that may leave you pale. 'Twas Halloween night, and as ghosts and goblins went out for a fright, our gardener stood stoic in the moonlit twilight.
Standing over a field in a dreamy din, knowing semi-fearful of what was to begin, a rake in one hand, a trowel in the other, he thought on what he may have unleashed, and it made him shudder.
All I wanted to do was grow pumpkins for a change. And almost fatedly, our hero met up with a character who was, well, we'll say strange. It was just a packet of seeds, he thought, like any other before, but he met this character on his way to his independent gardening store.
The stranger was hunched over and dirty, wearing patchwork pants, pushing along a wooden cart filled with plants. The plants were stunning, lush and green, unseasonably beautiful, unlike any our gardener had ever seen.
But the plant that stood apart from the rest, firelight orange, like a phoenix rising up from its nest, was the largest and plumpest pumpkin anyone ever saw, and our gardener gaped and stared at it in awe.
The stranger reached into his cart, pulling out a packet of seeds, and said, "To grow a pumpkin like this, all you need are these." Without thinking, our gardener stuck out of his hand. As the stranger retorted, "These are not your average seeds you plant in the land. They're All's Hallow Eve pumpkins, you know, and they need the light of a full moon to grow."
Our gardener ran off like Jack with his magic beans, for all the seeds cost him was a promise to write about them and the stranger in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Well, to hear the rest of this, you're going to have to go to MikeNovak.net. We're going to put this online with the music, and we're going to wish you a happy Halloween.
And a delicious trick-or-treat.
Yes, and all I've got to say is go green.
Or go home.